on this first Monday of August. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The nonpartisan Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, it tracks the influence of money in politics with a searchable database of campaign contributors to candidates running for state offices, and its records go back decades. They analyzed campaign finance from the first half of the year, found Governor Tony Evers' reelection campaign raised just over half of its coffers through individual contributions from people with Wisconsin addresses. Join in on tracking the money, PACs, dark money, campaign spending, why it matters, 800-642-1234. Matt Rothschild is executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Matt, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, Kate, thanks for having me on again. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, the Associated Press is reporting that this year's governor's race is on track to be the most expensive in state history. Do you anticipate that will be so?
Yeah, I think we're going to shatter the record that was set in the Evers-Walker race back in 2018, where the total money, including contributions to the candidates and then the outside money from outside groups, was $93 million by our count. We're just about halfway there already. And the primary is not even over yet. So I think we're going to shatter that record.
I ask this to people who follow the money and really track this data. How much does money influence elections now?
I think it's huge. Otherwise, they wouldn't be spending all this money. And unfortunately, a lot of it is advertising, and advertising, including and especially negative advertising, seems to work. Otherwise, the candidates wouldn't keep doing it. They wouldn't keep splattering our screens with mud, and our screens already covered with mud right now. So I think it's just going to get uglier and dirtier. But yeah, the money is crucial. If you don't have the money to do the ads, to change people's minds, you got to get out of the race. And so we see, you know, people on the Democratic side in the Senate race getting out because they didn't have enough money. Certainly Tom Nelson did. And then in the governor's race, it's going to just be a huge battle after this primary is over. And the primary on the Republican side has seen a lot of money already.
Where is all this money coming from, especially in the governor's race?
Well, fortunately, most of the money is coming from Wisconsin. I don't like a lot of money coming from outside the state. Why should someone in California be telling us who to vote for here in Wisconsin? And that's a problem both on the Democratic side and the Republican side. Governor Evers, by our count, has raised 52% of his money from inside Wisconsin. And the Republican candidates for governor, well, Michaels is almost entirely self-funded. And Rebecca Clayfish has raised 83% of her money from inside Wisconsin. So if that's a huge issue for you, then you can see at our website at wisdc.org where all the money's coming from and who the biggest contributors are.
You mentioned you don't like to see that out-of-state influence from California or elsewhere. To what extent do big campaign contributors get that special access or get favors in return for those donations?
Well, that's the primary concern of big money in politics, that, you know, the big donors are looking for something in return that the average listener to your show, Kate, you know, has no chance of getting. I mean, a regular citizen from Wisconsin, when we go to Washington, D.C. and knock on a senator's door, if we go to the Capitol in Madison and knock on the governor's door, they're not going to open the doors wide for us. But if you're a big donor to those candidates who win those offices, you know, you'll get the red carpet treatment. And so that's just not fair. And also, our voices are drowned out. The regular voices of people in Wisconsin who are listening to this show don't have nearly as much say over who the actual candidates are or what the laws are once the candidate wins, as those people who are throwing the big money around. A lot of the people throwing the big money around are doing it not so much for a favor, though, just because of their ideological positions. If they're a progressive and they're worried about Governor Evers losing, they want to make sure that they can spend money to make sure he wins. If they're a conservative, they want to spend a ton of money to make sure Governor Evers loses. So, I mean, it's part to get favors and it's part to, you know, get their ideological preferences enacted.
talking about campaign spending in the 2022 Wisconsin elections with Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, who tracks campaign contributions. You can join in on campaign finance, on spending, on PACs, dark money, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So where are candidates getting the out-of-state money from? Can you name names?
Well, yeah. I mean, Governor Evers got a lot of money from Silicon Valley folks. He got money from Steven Spielberg. Steven Spielberg gave $20,000 to Governor Evers and also gave $20,000 to Josh Call in the attorney general's race. So that's kind of the biggest name out there. And we hadn't seen Spielberg given a lot of money here in Wisconsin before, so that was kind of newsworthy.
We also have had Richard Uihlein of Illinois, a notable contributor. What do you see there on the Republican side?
Yeah, the Uihlein's, Richard and Elizabeth Uihlein, so far in the first 18 months of this election cycle, they've spent $38 million, both in federal candidates and in candidates here in Wisconsin. They are one of the biggest spenders nationwide on Republican candidates and Republican causes. So they're throwing their money around here, and I think they will be throwing their money around in the governor's race. There was a split there for a while. As to Elizabeth Uihlein was supporting one candidate and Richard Uihlein was supporting another. But I think they're going to combine forces. And also with Diane Hendricks of ABC Supply, they formed a super PAC, and they're going to just be throwing scads of money here to try to defeat Governor Evers.
Something to watch there. Let's go to Brad now in Madison. Brad, hi. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good morning. I'd like to see party people, party politicians, start to hold their own accountable a little more when it comes to corruption by the money. I think this tribalism that we have makes the problem far worse, and you just have one side pointing at the other side almost all the time. So, thank you.
How would you propose to do that, that accountability? What would you envision, Brad?
Democracy and bribery, regulate conflicts of interest. There's a whole slew of things that we can do that we don't do enough to try to change.
Brad, thank you for that. Matt, what are your thoughts there on accountability?
Really good question from Brad, and I'm glad he raised it. The first thing we need to do is try to amend the U.S. Constitution and overturn the Citizens United decision by the U.S. Supreme Court back in 2010 that said, the super rich people and the corporations can spend unlimited amounts of money to tell you who you should vote for or who you should not vote for. That was one of a series of horrible U.S. Supreme Court decisions. We've got to amend the U.S. Constitution to proclaim once and for all that, you know what, corporations actually aren't persons and money actually isn't speech. It's a long-term project. I know a shorter-term project is to rewrite Wisconsin's campaign finance law, which was horribly rewritten back in 2015 by the Republicans, signed by Governor Walker, which said rich people in Wisconsin and around the country can give unlimited amounts of money to political parties, and corporations can give to political parties for the first time in 100 years. That's crazy.
You mentioned that it's now been over a decade since the Citizens United case versus Federal Election Commission ruling, which the Supreme Court said corporations could not be barred from spending unlimited amounts to help elect campaigns. What impact has that ruling had on the price of campaigns over the decade?
Oh, it's been huge. It's been astronomical. I mean, that decision gave birth to these super PACs, where you have billionaires, just a handful of billionaires on the left and a handful of billionaires on the right, dominating the political discussion. And our politics shouldn't be a tug of war between a few billionaires on the left and a few billionaires on the right. In a real democracy, we'd all have an equal tug on that rope.
Matt Rothschild leads the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign nonpartisan watchdog group that tracks the influence of money in politics and promotes clean government. Join in on campaign finance reporting. the economic interests of candidates, political action committees, and money from outside interest groups. What you're seeing, what you wonder. 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing campaign finance in Wisconsin heading into election season with the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign that tracks individual contributions. All candidates on the August 9th primary ballot are required to file the pre-primary fall campaign finance report with the state by today. The report covering activity in July through the 25th. Join in on following the donations. Questions do you have about campaign finance laws and spending? 800-642-1234. Matt Rothschild heads up the nonpartisan Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and stays with us. Matt, we've seen Republican candidate Tim Michaels has almost entirely financed his own campaign for the governor, and with almost $8 million there. What's significant about him contributing that much?
Well, this is a problem we have, because unless you're independently wealthy or you want to become a glorified telemarketer, you can't really run for office successfully. I mean, this was, you know, Herb Kohl kind of paved the way for this, the Democratic senator from Wisconsin, who said, "I'm nobody's senator but yours," because he wasn't beholden to any one contributor or any bunch of super rich contributors, because he was super rich himself. And Tim Michaels has taken a page from Herb Kohl. And so he's able to self-finance. It gives a huge advantage to the candidate who's independently wealthy over someone who isn't. It's not necessarily a guarantee. We saw that with Alex Lazary in the Senate race here on the Democratic side, who's independently wealthy, and that didn't get him to victory. But it certainly gives you the inside lane.
Alex Lazary dropping out of the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate race after spending $12.3 million in the race. How much difference does that money make in a race like that, having that ability to draw on?
Well, it certainly gave him a head start, right? I mean, he got out of the gate real fast, and he was neck and neck with Mandela Barnes there for a little bit, and it looked like Lazary had a chance of winning the nomination. Now, Alex Lazary, you know, he didn't really have much of a name in Wisconsin, especially outside of Milwaukee. And so this gave him huge name recognition, all that money that went on the air, and his ads were everywhere, on every screen and every mailbox.
Why have campaigns become so expensive?
Well, it's more and more expensive to advertise. I mean, the people who really win during election times aren't the voters. The people who win are the consultants, the campaign consultants, and the commercial media outfits that get all these ads. So it's increasingly expensive to advertise. And so the money race keeps going on and on and on. Every time we count the money at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, we see that a record has been broken.
When you look down ballot, what about legislative races? Are they also generating a lot of donations, aside from the U.S. Senate race, aside from the governor's race?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of money in the legislative races. We're seeing some outside money in the attorney general race and in the secretary of state race. We see a lot of money coming in there. Amy Loudenbeck, who's running for secretary of state, has raised a lot of money, especially compared to the money by Secretary of State Doug La Follette. So our count is that Loudenbeck has raised $183,000 and that La Follette's raised $19,000, and Sabor, the other Democrat in the primary, has raised $14,000. So that's a race to watch. And then on the outside money front, I mean, I just love the names of these outside groups who are spending money in Wisconsin. One is called Badger Values Pack. This is actually for Adam Jarko. And it is a group, a pack that is not in Wisconsin. Actually, its mailbox is in Houston, Texas, and its bank is in Virginia. But the name of the pack is Badger Values Pack. I mean, that just kills me.
So what about dark money? What have you been seeing there, knowing exactly where this money is coming from?
So the outside money so far in the races for governor and down ticket here in Wisconsin exceeds $10 million already. And this is money that we can track. This is money called independent expenditures. This is money where they actually tell you who to vote for and who not to vote for. The dark money is even more insidious because there they don't say vote for or vote against, and they don't have to. So they don't have to disclose who they are, who their donors are. But the dark money ad can have as much an influence as this money where they're actually telling you vote for or vote against. We've all seen these ads, you know, call Governor Evers. Here's his number, 608 blank, 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 and tell him, you know, not to be such a horrible governor. Well, that's an ad guaranteed to tell you not to vote for Governor Evers, but they don't have to disclose who their donors are because they don't use those magic words. That's silly. And that's a problem that the U.S. Supreme Court has caused and that we got to fix. But yeah, well, there's going to be a lot of outside money. There's going to be some dark money. And we're just going to be drowning in it here between now and November.
Talking about campaign spending in this election cycle with Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, you can join in. Have you given money to a candidate? Tell us why. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Matt, there's a bunch of groups tracking this money. Open Secrets, Transparency USA, there's your group, there's the reporting that must happen by these campaigns to the Wisconsin Campaign Finance Information System, there's the Wisconsin Ethics Commission. Do you think that there's enough of a watchful eye, enough oversight on money in politics?
Well, the tracking, people can follow the tracking. I just think the media needs to do a better job of covering this issue. And I'm so glad you've been spending time covering it this morning. You mentioned Open Secrets. It's opensecrets.org. They cover the federal races, so they'll cover the races for this big race for U.S. Senate between Mandela Barnes and whoever wins the Republican nomination there. No, I mean Mandela Barnes against Ron Johnson, and already there's a ton of money being spent there. So I encourage people to go to opensecrets.org for these federal races and state races. Yeah, go to our website at wisdc.org, and we have something called Follow the Money, and you can track it right there. But I do think the public needs to know who's funding these candidates. They need to know who these outside groups are. And to the extent that we can track them down, we try to track down the dark money groups by calling the radio stations and TV stations and finding out who's paying for those ads, those really ugly negative ads that we're seeing more and more of.
When you hear the words campaign finance reform, what does that look like to you? What does it mean to you? I mean, you keep talking about the high court, the Supreme Court must do something. What does campaign finance reform look like?
Well, the exciting thing here in Wisconsin is there's a great group called Wisconsin United to Amend that has organized efforts all across the state in 167 communities that have passed resolutions or referendums saying, yes, we want to overturn the Citizens United decision. And yes, we want to amend the U.S. Constitution so that we aren't drowning in this dark money and big money all the time. And so that's a very successful grassroots movement. It's part of a national movement. Actually, Wisconsin is second only to Massachusetts in the number of communities that have passed these referendums and resolutions. And we need more grassroots work like that. So my hat's off to my friends over at Wisconsin United to Amend for all the work they're doing right here in Wisconsin. And also, we got to change our own campaign finance law, but we need to elect legislators who are committed to doing that.
I was looking at the top fundraisers overall in the state Senate compiled by Ballotpedia and Transparency USA. They based it on campaign finance reports. Overall, Democratic office holders raised nearly $500,000 in the first half of this year. Republican office holders and candidates in the state Senate raised $1.4 million. And that there is a significant gap. What does that tell you?
Well, I think the Republicans in Wisconsin rewrote our campaign finance laws for a reason, and because they think that they can raise more money from big Republican donors than Democrats can raise from big Democratic donors. For a while there, Ben Wickler at the Democratic Party of Wisconsin has proved that wrong in some races, but I think over time the Republicans were right in their calculations.
I just want, before we go here, we only have a few seconds left, but your organization is calling for the state's fake electors from the 2020 presidential election to be held accountable. What should happen?
There needs to be an investigation, and I believe there needs to be an indictment of the 10 false electors here in Wisconsin. I mean, they're being investigated in Georgia by the district attorney in Fulton County, the Georgia false electors. The Michigan attorney general is looking at the Michigan false electors. Why isn't Josh Call our attorney general, or why isn't Ishmael Ozan our district attorney here in Dane County investigating these false electors who impersonated our real electors at the Electoral College? And according to Law Forward, there may be a series of laws that they violated. Let's get an investigation. And if the laws were broken, let's have an indictment and a trial. We can't have people interfering with our democratic process and impersonating the real electors at the Electoral College and trying to overturn an election. These people were co-conspirators in the Trump movement to overthrow an election and need to be held accountable.
Matt, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Kate.
Matt Rothschild, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. New book, 12 Ways to Save Democracy in Wisconsin. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're in conversation with retiring Democratic State Representative Sandy Pope of Mount Horeb. Earlier this year, she announced she would not run for re-election, capping 20 years in the Assembly, representing Southwest Dane County as well as parts of Greene and Iowa counties. Some roadmap here for discussion. She co-sponsored a bill last year that would have repealed Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban. We get reaction with the fall of Roe. Also, paid family leave legislation that she supported got some recent traction in a GOP primary debate. Join in along the way, 800-642-1234. Representative Sandy Pope, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Well, let's start with family medical leave. You and your Democratic colleagues proposed creating an employee-funded statewide insurance program. State residents could have weekly paycheck deductions to go into this fund to pay for family medical leave. Why did you co-sponsor this legislation?
Well, I have done it a number of times before, along with State Senator Janice Ringhand, because it's the right thing to do. I think it's the moral obligation of the United States of America to recognize that families need to be protected, nurtured, and this bill would do that. I think the public would be astonished if they could see where the United States stands in the lineup of industrialized nations who provide this insurance or this program. We are way down at the bottom. I mean, dead last, in that we provide nothing. This country provides nothing.
Under Wisconsin law, an employee is entitled to take up to 2 weeks a year to care for a parent, a child, a spouse with a serious health condition. Federal law allows up to 12 weeks. What needs to happen here in Wisconsin?
Okay, well, the federal law allows it to happen, but allows it to happen as unpaid. Mm-hmm. And most of the people who need this cannot give up that income. So then they're sitting there faced with, well, do I recover after having a baby? Do I bond with my child? Do I take care of my dying, aging parent or my very sick, hospitalized spouse or child? Or do I continue to have an income, which we are counting on every week? So that's really not a healthy decision at all. And for many people, it's no decision. They have to keep their jobs. So the difference between paid leave and allowing unpaid leave is huge difference, huge difference. Mm.
Representative Pope, you know, under this legislation, neither the state nor employers would have to pay for this program, this worker-funded trust fund. Why should the burden fall completely on workers for such a benefit?
Well, I don't know that it should, but we have to start someplace. And this seems to be the most palatable way to introduce it. Employers aren't going to be paying into it, and the state taxpayer isn't going to be paying into it. The only people paying in are the ones who stand to benefit from it. And very much like unemployment insurance, it's a deduction from your paycheck based on gross earnings and numbers of hours worked, that sort of thing. And we can be extremely flexible in how we implement this because it's as a state law. If I could get my Republican colleagues who are the majority party to give it a hearing, that would be very helpful because we could certainly iron out the details and make this more palatable for them if that's the problem. But we can't get a hearing for this bill.
At a recent debate, several Republican candidates for governor have supported paid family leave, but the details are a little sketchy as to what exactly that they are supporting there. But are you encouraged by this?
A very little bit. It's easy to say those words. It's a whole nother thing to actually advocate for that sort of legislation. Or sign the bill if it should ever make it to your desk as governor. So words don't mean much. I would much rather hear from candidates running for the state legislature to say they would support this bill. And I have yet to get a Republican to sign on to this bill as a co-sponsor, or I've had one hearing on this bill in my entire time. So
why do you think that is?
Boy, I wish I could understand that on many levels, because they don't want to pass the bill, simply. If they wanted this bill to pass, if they actually supported it, it would have a hearing, it would come before us, and we could debate it and vote on it. But something tells me they just don't want it.
Talking with Representative Sandy Pope, a Democrat from Mount Horeb, retiring after 20 years in the state assembly. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Let's move on to abortion. Wisconsin Republican senators, they gaveled in, gaveled out in 14 seconds last month after Governor Evers had called a special session to repeal the 1849 abortion ban. The Republican candidates for governor support the abortion ban. And I'm just wondering what should be done as next steps.
Well, I can say at this point, I won't be there to do that. I'm just at wit's end about this. I don't understand how this could have happened in America. Women should be appalled. Women are appalled. People who support women, care about women. It's just astonishing to me that we would turn around and go that far backwards in terms of women's health care, women's choices, autonomy, all of their own bodies. Women are going to have to stand up and have their voices heard. And you're going to hear me say this more than once today. All of this can change. And it can change from the ballot box when people stop voting for those who support these kinds of laws. That's when it will change. Those of us who are in the legislature, in the minority, we can't make this change. The change has to come from the voters who are going to stop voting for people who don't actually represent their values.
Is your caucus, albeit in the minority, are you discussing next steps with your colleagues? And what are those conversations like?
Well, they're very fiery. They're very, we are pretty much at one over this issue. And right now, because the legislature is not in session, we aren't actually meeting in caucus. But those folks out on the campaign trail are certainly hearing from the constituents. We hear from them every day. It's a very, very huge issue here in Wisconsin. And I think November might reflect some of that.
Yeah. What do you see there? What impact might the fall of Roe have on people voting this November?
Well, if people stop and think about what do I want to happen in my state, in my country, and are the people who are there now providing those things to me, i.e. reasonable gun regulation, measures like background checks, things that the majority, the vast majority of the people want, are the people I'm voting for reflecting those values? And you simply have to recognize that they aren't here in Wisconsin, certainly. The abortion issue, it's more than abortion. It's women's health care. People have procedures that have nothing to do with an actual abortion as the public thinks of it. These are medical procedures that are necessary for reasons other than, I don't want this baby. I mean, my goodness, people need to think more deeply than this. It's just, people have to stop and think about who am I voting for and what are they going to deliver to me as a citizen.
Representative Sundee Pope, I want to pause here and go back to our first topic, because Jessica from Sun Prairie called in, couldn't stay with us, but Jessica on the topic of family medical leave wants to know how people with disability benefits would be affected by paid leave legislation. Would they continue paying into the benefits or would they lose them?
Again, that kind of question will come with actually crafting a bill that is palatable to both sides. There's a great deal of flexibility. As we look across the United States, paid family medical leave is available in something like 13 states, and each one of them is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So that could be built in if we wanted to, as could the numbers of employees within a business structure, or how long you have worked at a particular business or entity as an employee in order to qualify. All of those sorts of things can be worked out any way we want them to.
Representative Sundee Pope, a Democrat from Mount Horeb, not running for re-election, capping 20 years in the state assembly, ranking member of the Assembly Committee on Education. Join in on the school funding formula. Join in on school safety, mental health, the needs of rural districts versus urban, 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show. Back in a minute with Representative Pope here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Democratic Representative Sundee Pope, whose district includes Southwest Dane County, parts of Iowa and Greene counties. First elected to the Assembly in 2002 and was initially compelled to run for office on education issues. Join in on public school funding formula, mental health supports, issues connected to teachers and students. 800-642-1234. Representative Sundee Pope of Mount Horeb stays with us. Let's bring in another caller. Andy is with us from Appleton. Andy, hi, go ahead.
Pleasantries. I think Wisconsin's about a 65% population on polls is supporting abortion, a woman's right to choose her control of her own body in all cases. Is there any way we can just bypass the legislators altogether? Because I don't trust them at all. And just have a referendum so the state voters are heard?
Going directly to voters, Representative Pope.
Well, I guess that would have to start at the municipal level, wouldn't it? Or a citizen action. And that would seem reasonable to me, considering how stark this announcement has been of ending a woman's right to choose. But it's a possibility. It's certainly a possibility. I should think, I don't know, I thought Sandy Hook was going to be what triggered the end of assault weapons being provided to people who obviously don't need them. And I don't know what it's going to take in this case. It's just unfathomable to me that this has happened to the United States. In the 20 years I've served in the legislature, I would never have dreamed when I began that I would be ending with the United States looking like this. Kate, I did want to go back to a question that you asked me, and that was why I introduced the Family Medical Leave Insurance Program.
Mm-hmm.
When I was campaigning for this office, I recall meeting a woman at a picnic table at a local festival, and we were chatting, the two of us. And at that time, my husband was dying of pancreatic cancer, and we were sort of consoling each other. And she said that her husband was dying at home with a terminal illness. They had no family here. She actually went to Goodwill and bought a lot of men's belts, and she would belt him to the sofa during the day so he wouldn't fall off. She would go to work. She would come home at lunch, and she'd come home in the evening. And that was the only safe option she had for her husband, because she had to have her employer's insurance, provided medical insurance, to get through this. And she had to have her income. That is just unthinkable to me, and it broke my heart to hear that story. And I thought, we can do better. However, I have discovered in the interim that we won't do better. It's something that it's a moral issue to me. It's just a moral issue.
Thank you for sharing that story. I want to turn now to education, and you've mentioned firearms a couple times in this conversation. What are the greatest needs of Wisconsin schools right now as you see it?
Adequate support. And I'm talking about support in terms of funding. I'm talking about support in terms of providing teachers the autonomy that they need to do the craft that they have acquired, to exercise their knowledge of their students and the skills that they have as teachers. They need to have the legislature stop interfering. They need the one thing I guarantee you that they don't need is Speaker Robin Voss's notion that teachers should be armed. The last thing we need is more guns in schools. That is just an insane thought to me. But adequate funding, we have fallen so far behind in our funding mechanism for schools. And a big chunk of that problem is that the taxpayer dollars are now going to private voucher schools. And that money goes first, and what's left over once those vouchers are paid, that's what is divided up for our public schools. Public schools that are required by law to teach every single student who comes to the door, regardless of what condition they come in, what level of learning, what level of physical or mental handicap. And it's an unfair playing field for sure.
I want to pause right there, because Wisconsin school districts were allotted nearly $2.4 billion in one-time federal pandemic relief funds, have until September 2024 to spend it. And we've heard from Republicans in the legislature that just this should be extremely helpful in funding our public schools, that districts don't need that extra increase when you look at the amount of federal aid pouring in. What are your thoughts there?
My thoughts are that those legislators ought to go to a school one time and spend a couple weeks in school actually seeing what goes on. One-time money that was intended and used to address the pandemic is not putting more money in education. It is putting needed, necessary money into responding to a global pandemic. It's nonsense to think that we should be funding public education on federal dollars intended for pandemic relief and one-time money. Then what do you do after that is spent? What's the answer? We can't keep dumping on the property taxpayers. That mechanism is failing, and we can do better. We should do better. Again, check and see what kind of support you're getting from the people that you are electing to serve you in the legislature. They make that decision. That's where it's going wrong. It's not the teachers, it's not the superintendents, it's not the schools, it's the people who are deciding on the funding that goes and what has to be taught and how.
Talking with Representative Sandy Pope, Democratic member of the Assembly for the past 20 years. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Let's talk about voting then. We have seen the state Supreme Court stated that absentee ballot drop boxes are not allowed now under state law. You have supported automatic voter registration, barring voter intimidation, creating a voter bill of rights. How do you feel about, you know, discontinuing the use of absentee ballot drop boxes and other measures?
In a word, I think it's asinine. This country should be making voting easier, not more difficult. If you want to call yourself a democracy, then act like it. Here in my village, there is a drop box built into the entryway of the municipal building, and it is taped shut. We cannot use it because the Republican legislature says that I have to take my ballot in and hand it to not somebody or put it in a tray or into a box. I have to give it to the clerk. And my father, who died in April, used to do absentee ballot. He would have to figure out how to get out of his bed. He was bedridden before he died, and walk that absentee ballot out to his own mailbox or figure out how to get to his municipal building and give it to his clerk in order to vote. That's practically criminal in my mind, to shut people out of the ability to cast a ballot in this country. It's criminal.
We only have a few seconds left, but we've seen the ongoing conspiracy theories surrounding the 2020 election that have played a major role in the primary campaign as Republican candidates vie to take on Governor Evers in the fall. Rebecca Clayfish has said she'll eliminate the Wisconsin Elections Commission. What are your thoughts on the commission, and should it be removed?
Of course not. Absolutely, of course not. Again, I am appalled at what has happened to my democracy in the last 20 years, last 11 years. People need to think about these things. Is this really what you want? Do you want legislators deciding who the president is going to be based on what? This entire debacle is practically laughable, except it's scary. I fear for the survival of democracy in this country. And that may sound startling to some, but I honestly do. If some of these notions are allowed to become law, we are in a great deal of trouble. People need to take their vote more seriously, especially this year.
Representative Pope, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Representative Sandy Pope, a Mount Horeb Democrat, retiring this year after serving 20 years in the state assembly. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.